Well, good afternoon, everyone. I want to welcome you all to this Las Animas County Board of County Commissioners acting in its capacity as the Board of Human Services. Today is Tuesday, October 15, 2024. It is now 1 p.m. Please rise. I'm calling the meeting to order. Please rise for an invocation by Commissioner Luis Lopez and followed by the Pledge of Allegiance.
Heavenly Father, we thank you for this opportunity to gather here. We ask that you guide us in our thoughts as today we move forward making decisions on behalf of the community of Los Animas County. We ask you, Lord, to protect the staff and employees of Los Animas County at this time as well. We thank you for all the opportunities we have, Lord, and we praise you in your precious name. Amen.
Amen. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Roll call, Mr. Aragon.
Commissioner Haas. Commissioner Luis Lopez.
Here.
Commissioner Felix Lopez.
Present. Approval of the agenda. Do you have any changes to the agenda, Mr. Aragon?
Yes, Commissioner. Item 2 minutes for September, I'm asking that we remove that and we'll address those in the November meeting if possible. Outside of that, no additional changes.
Thank you, sir. I'll make a motion at this time to approve the agenda with that noted change, item 2A.
Second motion.
Commissioner Luis Lopez?
Yes.
Commissioner Felix Lopez?
Yes. And this is one of those add-ons, a public comment, and that goes for any employee as well, or anyone online that would like to use this time for public comment, 3 minutes, unmute, or please come up to the podium. Hearing none, I'm gonna go to the director's report. Mr. Eric.
Commissioners, good afternoon. For the report today, I've got several items to either update or go over. I did provide you with a letter that I'm hoping that you've already seen from Colorado Counties, Inc. This letter was sent on behalf of Jennifer O'Haron and Janet Rowland, both of Rio Blanco and Mesa County. It was to Michelle Barnes, Director of CDHS in at Colorado, Kim Binstetter with Healthcare Policy and Finance, and Lisa Roy with the Colorado Department of Early Childhood, CC'd to the Joint Budget Committee. So as I mentioned in the last meeting, there were several financial concerns and funding concerns that we were looking at and continuing to monitor and study. I'll call your attention to the first page of that letter and then the subsequent memo that was sent to the Joint Budget Committee on behalf of the Colorado Human Service Directors Association. Under county administration, one of the things that I want to point out is Senate Bill 22-235, which results have illuminated that we are at a $30 million funding need throughout the state of Colorado amongst the 64 counties. That is the amount of funding it would take for us to maintain moving forward current staffing and meeting the guidelines of federal and state rule for many of our programs, especially our cash assistance programs. That $30 million under county administration specifically is $21 million for Medicaid processing through HCPF and more than $8 million for processing SNAP or food benefits and adult financial programs through CDHS. Those are the specific programs and mandates that we're looking at and requesting that. And the reason for that is that in fiscal year 24, as of right now, it is projected that we will be overspent statewide in almost $19 million in county administration across the state. We locally, at the close of 23-24 fiscal year, saw a $30,000 overage in county administration for DHS in the county. Now, again, with that, as Deputy Director, if you're working not here, but reported in several meetings, we will utilize the incentives earned by our economic security team to backfill that $30,000 loss. But that just goes to show you the volume of work coming in and the amount of funding it's taking to keep up with that mandate. So we're hoping that the JVC will consider some form of progressive is what CHSDA is requesting, a progressive or incrementally increasing county administration over time. The next one we talked about in depth last month, which was the CCAP program. CCAP, specifically our child care assistance program. As you know, House Bill 23-1233, which was the recent federal rulemaking, significantly affect the functions of these programs. So because of that, we are looking at having to serve fewer families. And as I mentioned in the last meeting, our current allocation for the new fiscal year 24-25 only allows us to fund about 47 seats total. Across the state of Colorado, to minimize the gap, JBC and the state would have to look at a $56 million investment in a deadline by 2026 in order to meet the federal rule that was just passed, along with maintaining the accessibility for counties statewide. The third programmatic area that I want to draw your attention to is adult protective services. We have seen over the last 2 years increases in substantiated findings in cases, which has almost doubled, if not tripled, workload for many of our adult protective service units across the state. Ours here locally, as we have two caseworkers, it's a unique situation. We often find that adult protective service programs are much smaller in scale to those of child welfare. Does not mean that the mandate is not just as equal, if not more, in some cases, because there are less staff. In the prior fiscal year, 22-23, we saw about a $1.8 million overage in adult protective. This fiscal year, we saw close at a $2 million plus in overage.
Statewide.
Yeah. Locally, we did have a slight overage in our program as well. There are no incentive fundings to cover that cost, but that is due to the extensive workload and caseload that we saw at the beginning of fiscal year 23 and ending in 24. I will give Ms. Ringo, who's here in the room with us, and her team kudos, as they've been able to streamline a lot of services. And so there is a substantial decrease in caseload, but it doesn't mean that that mandate won't rear back up. It ebb and flows like child welfare. It's oftentimes, like now as we're entering into the holiday season, we will get substantially more referrals for adult protective services. Then it will kind of wall for a while sometimes because of the winter months and people aren't out and they're not actively seeing some of the folks. And then when weather warms up, we start to see that increase in caseload again. So there's a substantial need across the state for increased funding in that. And then the final piece that I just want to point is that the letter also addresses at the end continued county tax-based relief. And the reason for that is in the past with our Colorado Works program, we've always been offered, in the time that I've been here, MOE relief option. To date, we have not received an MOE offer of relief from the state. So that mandate of the allocation provided, which we have to meet under the MOE, for Colorado Works TANF programming, we will be at the full amount so far. We've not received any update on that allocation being the county tax relief portion of it. Questions on those components, commissioners?
Yes, thank you. In doing a little bit of math here, we're looking at just $88 million of tangible cash, just basically to look at this. Now, when you're talking about CBMS, I mean, that is going to be one of the comments here to complement this investment. An effective Colorado benefit management system is essential to providing excellent customer service. We've been talking about CBMS now for 5 years that I've been attending these meetings. So the $88 million or $100 million in cash, whatever that is, the state, it's my understanding that the statewide budget is already at a huge deficit.
900?
It's a significant deficit.
Yeah, $900 million. So this letter, while it's very much appreciated from both of my fellow commissioners, great. But do you know if they have received any feedback from HIPAA for any one of the individuals there? Because at the end of the day, they're going to go. Now, on the JVC, we have some pretty good people on that. We have, and I don't know if that's going to be changing, but Senator Rachel Zinsinger and Mark Kirkmeyer, they're both one from each side of the aisle. They have worked very diligently to make appropriations, and both of them understand that these services, I mean, the cash to balance the entire statewide budget, how high of a priority are we on their list?
Yep,
Not necessarily a question, but I'm just kind of a.
I agree completely. I think the reality of the situation is that over the last, let's see, I've been now director for the department for almost 5 years, and in that time, I have seen the federal government putting mandates upon programs specifically, which has increased that workload and mandate. The state of Colorado for both Medicaid and for SNAP were non-compliant with several federal rules. So the state having to make those adjustments put those mandates upon counties to meet, and again, those were completely unfunded. Those rules or those mandates were specific to policy that we were not compliant with in the issuance of Medicaid and food benefits. It was also reported to the Human Service Directors at the last CCI conference that the SNAP program is one of the most expensive programs in the US to run out of Colorado. Primarily, I believe it's tied to the usage of CBMS in order to process those cases and the cost associated with the technology, the various groups of organizations that feed into CBMS as interface options, and as well as the actual volume of SNAP benefits going out the door. That combination has put our SNAP program as one of the top five most expensive programs to run in the US. That is not a mandate that counties can turn or look away from. Those mandates or federal rules we have to comply with that have been handed to us by HCPCS. I will tell you, I myself and my team have written, I don't know how many multiple policies over the last 4.5, 5 years. Some were should have been in place. Some were new, but a lot of these mandates are coming from that federal level, and that's what's increasing this workload.
Well, question, Mr. Aragon, when does the Association of the Department of Human Service Directors, or what do you call it,
CHSDA.
CHSDA, what's their plan, if anything, to move forward with the approach to the JBC, and or has there been any communications with them about possibly, since they're unfunded mandates to county agencies, of filing legal action?
Well, nothing's been discussed regarding legal action. That's not been any part of the discussion that's been had. To my understanding, the HCPCS, SNAP, and Medicaid compliance were state compliances that should have been put in place decades ago, that were not policies that were not in place, that required the Medicaid, and part of it is to mitigate the errors that were being made by technicians in entering information into the system. Every time a technician enters anything into the CBMS system and processes that case that it's not appropriate or it's an error in some fashion, runs the risk of two things. One, it's an increased workload because obviously we have to go back and review those cases and spend more time observing where that concern happened. So it's a training issue. It was also deemed by the state HCPCS office that there was a communication issue. And that is that when letters are generated at the state, our technicians enter information in the system, the state generates letters that go out to clients. We do not send them from our office directly. The communication in those letters was not clear and concise to deadlines and timelines for turning in paperwork. That increased workload as well, because then we saw volumes and volumes of redeterminations coming through the door that should have been done in prior months. So now you've got compiled workload because of that. The state has made those adjustments along with the increased volume that we've seen in folks moving to Colorado and in need. I mean, there's just so many factors that feed into this whole piece. from CHSDA's standpoint, the executive committee did meet last week, I believe, and the approach to JBC is that, you know, we realize the state's current position in the budget, but the reality is that incrementally over the next few fiscal years, is there opportunity to find some way to assist in this? We're not asking for that 80 plus million now. It's how do we get to that point, or as we continue to observe services and we continue to retrain staff to make sure that we're mitigating duplication of work and errors, then we should see that hopefully drop in a mandated funding component.
Well, and thank you for your group getting together and sending this to CCI. So I know both Commissioner Heron and Commissioner Boland, they're pretty big supporters of CBHSA. So one thing, I think they're probably going to give us a little bit of lip service, which we will hear here in a few weeks at the winter conference. Michelle may be there. Kim is probably going to be there as well. And let's follow up and see what exactly could happen. My question, two questions here is, one is the investments on the last paragraph on Canada, the Colorado Works, the investment of behavioral health services for children pursuant to the settlement agreement from GA2. Is that Kim?
It was.
Wow. Can you expound on that just a
minute? I don't have many details on that specific lawsuit. And again, keep in mind that we also have, and I'm not sure where the state's at settling with the DOJ, we had a state-level lawsuit against long-term care access for IDD and at-risk populations as well. And then we did have that as well. And I believe that that behavioral health service for children was primarily due to the Medicaid programming mitigating or limiting the number of sessions per youth in behavioral health services.
So in a sense, that's a lawsuit against the state, but because she's the representative.
Correct.
Okay, very good.
Correct. Yeah.
Thank you.
That was my understanding from that. I think primarily out of this letter, the main piece that CHSDA and I as a director have the most concern with is what we talked about last month was the CCAP program. Because of House Bill 24-12-23, that federal rule changes the way that we process, the way that we accept, and the way that we put youth into those programs. With that being said, that $56 million is the basis, that's the gap to fill what we are not going to be able to pay out in this fiscal year.
So then is the federal government, if we're not able to meet, will come back at Colorado once again with perhaps another legal complaint?
It could very well be, because under CCAP, there is specific language that it states, let me see if I can find it here. Okay, counties could be forced to overspend their allocations despite state statute that clearly prohibits counties from being required to do so. Counties urge CDEC and the governor's office to pursue an emergency supplemental to cover the cost of those counties who lack the flexibility to manage their budgets and will overspend. So there is state rule, and that federal rule under the 1223 does not negate that. So the state is going to have to find some way to fill that gap, because as a county, we should not be liable for those overages. And the last few years, it's been covered by ARPA, but as ARPA has sunsetted, and because UPK is not funding the way it's supposed to, there is a massive mandate with CCAP, and that gap is huge.
Yeah, and it goes back to the conversation that you and I have had ongoing. UPK, they just gave it a nickname, but it's not really universal.
No.
And the funding is not there. But at what point in time, the Board of County Commissioners is going to say, wait a minute, we cannot longer afford to provide those services, because one of the things that we have to do is fiduciary responsible, not incur debt for ongoing years. Yet we have a population that requires and demands those services. But if the state's not going to be doing the backfill, we're going to be in a pretty huge predicament.
Yeah, absolutely. As I mentioned to the board in the last meeting, if we project with the current number of youth that we have in there, and keep in mind that we are federally mandated to meet the need of child welfare. So if there are youth that are mandated to be in the CCAT program, we are required to put them in regardless of any type of waitlist or freeze that's in place, because they supersede. With that overage in that program, and then also keep in mind, as we've talked about with Colorado Works, the increase to the basic cash assistance, there was a House bill passed in 2021, I believe it was, because there had not been a cost of living adjustment to that program for some time. And so there was a 30% increase to the BCA over a five-year period. That starts eating away at TANF funds that we receive. And historically, and we'll talk about this in the budget hearing today, is that ultimately when we are underspent in Colorado Works, we can reallocate those TANF funds to cover overages in CCAP or child welfare. With that BCA mandate and the number of clients we have over the years, as that increases, that funding will start to deplete any overage that we can move over. It also runs the risk of us losing our TANF reserve, because that TANF reserve is what is used during stabilization of a natural disaster. When the county commissioners declare a state of natural disaster in the county, we have a ceiling of approximately $366,000 in Los Angeles County that can be utilized at that time. That is to pay for overtime for staff to be on deck 24/7 to assist with getting benefits in place. That's temporary housing. That's whatever that requires. We would work with Mr. Richards, our emergency manager, to deem what services we need to be put in place. But if we're not feeding into that reserve fund because we're exhausting that CCAP or that Colorado Works, we run the risk of not having stabilization funding throughout each of the counties as well. I mean, it's just a triple effect that is going to impact us either way. So the reality is that the only thing as an association and as counties is to push to the JBC that with this specific mandate in those TANF programs, those are the ones that are going to deplete and drain a lot of counties statewide. And the reality is large counties have huge fund balances or reserves. Small and medium-sized counties don't. It will deplete small and medium-sized counties within no time.
Well, and I know the county tax base relief, that it's a pretty good ask. I'm not going to hold my breath. That's not going to happen.
No. And even at that, Commissioner, and as even this year's, you know, we sold a portion of our MLE and our Colorado Works off because we did not actually require it. We kept enough to cover what CCAP overage we had for this year. But ultimately, moving forward, we are going to look at having to reserve that, which means that those counties that normally would be able to purchase that MOE and that portion off are, if they're over, those counties are going to start eating away. The programs will, in time, collapse upon themselves unless the state and the feds can figure out how to fund it.
And like I said a month ago, elections have consequences, and it looks like they have California, Colorado.
It is scary. It is very scary to think about how we're going to meet that mandate.
Overspend, and now you put your core projects in the core.
And part of the problem was the pandemic during that time. We gave that max amount and did not reserve. We didn't pull back. It was put it in place, get it out there, and it had consequences. And these are the consequences. That was, like I said last month, there was a cliff effect. People thought it wasn't real. It's real. And it hit. And so our toes are hanging over the edge, and the gravel is starting to kick out from under us. And right now in this county, I feel comfortable with at least the next 2 to 3 years. But that also means depleting our fund balance significantly to meet that mandate. What happens after those 3 years?
You know, they probably have a better story than you do. Yeah.
I told you, I feel like I'm Debbie Downer when I go to meetings, but no. The reality is, especially like with Medicaid services, it impacts our providers here in town. It impacts our hospital. It impacts our prisons. It impacts a lot of the agencies that have folks that utilize those Medicaid dollars. And ultimately, we as a county agency, DHS, are responsible to make sure that we get those out the door. But the state and the feds putting those mandates upon us have increased that workload tenfold. And we are continually internally reviewing our business and operations to try and adjust to cut costs where we can so that we can streamline services as best as possible. One of those being that we're moving to a digital platform. So the cost of printing and the cost of paper and the cost of, we've cut that cost significantly back over the last 5 years. Now we have an opportunity to cut it back almost 90, 95%. There will always be some for, but that is one of our highest costs. So we've cut a lot of costs where we can already. There are counties that can't do that. They can't afford that. And their operations are still as they were 5 years ago. So,
all right.
Those are the fun in and outs of my director's report this month.
$86 million. All right. Wow.
Other questions, commissioners?
I know I don't. So thank you for that report. We're going to go all the way down to section 6A, consideration of caseload counts and activity rate program, pretty much all the way down to subsection 5 of those 5. We thank you for sending that information beforehand. I don't know, Commissioner, you have any questions on those counts?
Commissioners, I will point at the end of this, you'll see a new report, which is from our workforce development services. This has not been in your packet in the past, so I wanted to point out we are tracking numbers, and you'll see there, these are the number of clients that our workforce development coordinator worked with in the month of September. Moving forward, we'll be tracking that month to month. You'll see that there are TANF specific clients, there are child support specific clientele, and then there are general referrals to the Workforce Center. And so as of right now, we've worked with a total of, that 54 is incorrect. I don't know why I totaled out to that, but we have 8 that were TANF referrals. Those are specifically from our Colorado Works program. We have had 1 in that month of referrals from our child support, and we have 3 from general referrals. Which our workforce development coordinator was able to get 2 into gainful employment. One thing that's not tracked on here, though, is registration into education and certification programming. We're working on getting that data as well.
So of those 14, not 54, correct. If the numbers are correct, that is the representative that you have at the Workforce Center,
correct.
That is working directly with TSE.
Correct.
Okay.
Yes. Yes. So that person is tasked with either working towards gainful employment for the individual or getting them enrolled in either GED or some form of certification or educational program.
And will you later on have of those 8 referrals from TANF, how many of them were able to secure gainful employment?
We will, okay. As great. We move forward. Yes.
Commissioner Lopez, any questions on that?
Just the measures of effectiveness on that. That is your funds you're receiving for the incentives, right?
I'm sorry?
The incentive funds is at $42,736. You might not have it back. August 24th, measures of effectiveness.
Is that under child support?
Yes. DCSS.
Yeah. Which one are you looking at?
You have it highlighted.
The bottom. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so the total incentives received for 2023 through 2024 was that $42,736.89. So those were the actual retained incentives. There are, so the way child support works, and we can talk about it with the budget as well, is that it is a federal funded only program. There is no state funds. So when we talk about the incentive funds that come through, you'll see various funds that are child support retained incentives, and then there are child support state and federal pass-through incentives. What that means is that any of the state and federal pass-through go to the state office of child support to fund them. So the work we do here gains incentives that are routed from the work we do to the state office to keep them funded partly.
Right, and but these incentive funds are able to be manipulated for, they're not restricted funds, are they?
They are restricted to DCSS only, though. Yeah, we cannot use them in any other program.
Well, we don't line item budget that amount because you don't know what the incentives are going to be from year to year, correct?
We have a general idea up front based on the prior year workload.
Okay.
So we do put that amount in there, but it can fluctuate. It can go up, it can go down. Just depends.
Okay, thank you.
And those are received quarterly. So as of right now, you'll see through December of, through quarter one and quarter two, the total that we've received for this year is the $25,013.25.
That was a typo for 2023?
No, that was the prior year. Okay. Yeah. That's just to give you a comparison of last year to what we learned this year.
So third, fourth quarter haven't been collected yet. So.
Correct. That's correct.
I have another question, Chairman. Yes, sir. Having no other questions, I make a motion to approve the caseload counts and activity by program June and July.
Second the motion.
Commissioner Luis Lopez?
Yes.
Commissioner Felix Lopez?
Yes. 6B, consideration of MOU agreement, Broward County State Child Welfare Hotline. Council, you read this document probably more than once. Do you have any concerns, any legal questions?
I have reviewed. I have no legal concerns, Commissioner.
Thank you so much. Commissioner Lopez?
I have no concerns, Chairman.
Pretty much standard language. And any increase on the cost of the agreement, Mr. Aragon, from year to year?
We have seen slight increases over the year. It's primarily based on the volume of referrals taken in. At this time, I would say our current is probably equal or just slightly above from last year, but not significant.
$75, I look like.
Yeah. And just for clarification of record, because I know we're on, but this is our hotline that we utilize for child welfare. We also from time to time do receive APS. It's very rare, but this is primarily how we capture referrals for our child welfare program and child protective services.
Former Commissioner Andrade was very proud of this program she had developed out there in Broward County.
Yeah.
How many counties participate in this?
I essentially believe most of the
entire
counties.
State.
I'm not sure.
Everyone except for the metros.
So yeah.
Like Denver County has their own hotline. I think El Paso County has their own hotline. And
Pueblos. Yeah, Arapaho might.
Yeah.
Pueblos on this, I think.
And it is a buy-in program, so you don't have to have it as your primary referral system, but it's super handy to have it.
Sure.
And I know Commissioner Andrade was very proud of it, but even Broward County didn't buy into it in the beginning. They ran it, but they didn't use it to take out the first 2 years. I don't know what the system is now.
Well,
she was at Powers prior, so she would know.
Well, you know, it's always good to have somebody else taste your meal and see if they like it, right?
Yeah.
Now, I would imagine customer service is it's above reproach as far as when they get a call, automatic referral to the county.
Yeah, I would like a little bit better grammar and question asking, that kind of stuff. Like, you know, they're not professionals, and sometimes it's hard to read the referrals depending on who takes the call. But in general, it takes a lot of more plates.
Is there, and I know right here on the document it says that we can get up to so many reports per month and per year. Is there an opportunity for feedback as far as, hey, you know what, if you get a report that is completely non-readable, because you get those via email or?
We get them through the state hotline system. So
okay.
It's comes through Trails Mod.
Okay.
So, yeah. And we could report back. I mean, none of them have been bad enough that we kind of say, I don't know what this is, and send it back.
So if somebody calls the hotline in a different language other than English, are they able to respond?
I think so, yeah.
Yeah, but you get the report in English.
Yes.
Okay. We do. We do. They are mandated to have translation services available for the hotline. So that is, and there is actually an annual, the directors receive an opportunity to provide feedback. So okay. We do have that option every year. It's a comprehensive process that we send multiple feedback on different programs that we buy into.
Thank you. So the total $4,625 is the total investment for call coverage services
for Los Angeles County.
For Los Angeles County for mm-hmm. a 12-month period.
Correct.
And since legal counsel has no questions on this, Commissioner Lopez, any additional comments, questions on this?
No, sir.
If not, I will entertain a motion.
Motion to approve MOU agreement, Broward County State Child Welfare Hotline.
I second that motion.
Commissioner Luis Lopez?
Yes.
Commissioner Felix Lopez?
Yes. Information only, preliminary budget review for year 2025.
Right, Commissioners, this is a new process for me. So I, in last year's review and audit, we had discussed the department providing an opportunity to question budget. And so I've invited my staff, they're welcome to stay. But this is an opportunity for us to sit down and actually review the budget, review the programs, and specifically go over any items that you have questions on. I will thank Director Coberly for presenting on October 1st to the board as part of her compliance for state. That was presented as part of the main Los Angeles County board or Los Angeles County budget. But this is the more detailed budget that DHS produces. This is available online through our website. Staff and community are able to access it through there. And we make that available also, I believe, on the county's main financial page as well.
This one hasn't been published yet, right? This
correct.
Is draft, okay.
Yeah, this is preliminary. Any changes, and I will make note that an operational memo was given to us on... I believe it was September 30th, so we were not able to make the adjustment, but the LEAP program did make an adjustment to the administrative allocation. So that is not reflected in this specific budget, but it will be reflected in the final draft budget, which will come out for December. Where would the board like to start with?
Page 1.
Okay. That is their cue to duck out. So under the preliminary budget, this does not change year to year, but is a definitions page, which outlines the difference between an annual budget or what we also call a calendar year. The Department of Human Services.
I was joking, Michael.
But I do want to clarify those. Okay. We actually have several. Our new requirement of posting has brought us some new folks that are joining us on the call today, virtual, that we've never had public before. So we're excited to have them on. And I just want to clarify that that is outlined in there, the budgetary notes. And then also each of the programs is broken out with the definition of where that funding comes from, how it is utilized, and what the MOE match for each of those programs looks like for the department.
Yeah.
And so the question I have going into page 23, right underneath the definition, same page, is the MOEs have not changed, or have they in percentage-wise? I see one is at 10.21% and 89.79 on the state federal partners programming. What is that one?
So, the MOE percentages have not changed. That would be something that the state legislative and or the federal would have to make those recommendations and approve. I believe they would also have to be at the voter level. Anything that's 100% is obviously state or federally funded. That means the county has no match or maintenance of effort MOE required. The 95 or the 90-10 is primarily our child welfare staffing. That is a annual survey goes out to each of the counties in that it determines the workload. And there are only several counties, us included, that are on that where we receive a funding for a child welfare caseworker rather than at an 80-20 administrative cost, we get one at a 90-10. That was under a specific house bill, and I don't have that off the top of my head.
The reason why I ask is because we moved back 20 minutes ago with your discussion of the bills that were shorting, you know, $56 million and $30 million. Are any of those programs included in these percentage of county MOE, or are those 100%? Because if they're 100%, who's going to backfill them?
No. So the TANF program, specifically Colorado Works, is the 85-15 program that we're looking at. That is the MOE match for that. Our CCAP program is the 89.79 to 10.21% breakout. And our child welfare, which is the third TANF program, it is broken at the 80-20. But there are also several other funding streams that come into child welfare other than the 80-20. There's 100% in the child welfare that we also receive.
So in the shortfalls that we're going to see at the state level, like you mentioned in 2026, 2027, how do you anticipate balancing this budget with those cutting programs, doing away with staffing? What's the next step?
So the main step would be is to identify, first and foremost, the volume versus the operational, the day-to-day. What are we looking at spending in overtime? What are we looking at in regards to the workload? As we transition to the digitized system and less of the physical paperwork, there should be a streamline to that so that we're not having to pay significant overtime to meet the mandates of those specific programs. The other thing that we're looking at is with the Colorado Works program, we have traditionally had a lot of folks who have gotten onto that program. It is a 60-month program that they are within that time frame required to become gainfully employed or on their way to gainful employment. Historically, prior to me coming in, we were not actually successful in very many. In fact, I believe the first year I was here, we had one GED graduation. There have been no others that have received gainful employment and come off that program. So they were exhausting the full 60 months. What we're doing between the Workforce Development Coordinator now, which is at the Workforce Center, along with specializing technicians in those specific programs, is getting clients into those programs, getting them gainfully employed and half before the 60 months. Because even post 60 months, there's also options for diversion payments, which can be requested, or extensions. Those were traditionally being paid out because we were not successful in getting those folks into the employment that they need. Now, as we move forward with those referrals and we're able to get those folks off the books, we should see a lesser cost associated with the BCA payments, the basic cash assistance, with the CCAP program, with those specific areas, because we're actually getting those folks out of the programming and not letting them take full advantage of that time frame.
So
that's where our excess cost locally has come from traditionally.
So out of that $86 million locally, it's going to be maybe a million? I mean, this is statewide, right?
Yeah, that's statewide. It's hard to put a specific number.
I just want to make sure that you guys are very cautiously moving forward for these shortfalls, because I really don't see the state coming through with the JPC or not.
Yeah, no, and then I mean, even projection right now with the number of clients we have on Colorado Works, we should be able to still have a large portion of the MOE that we can transfer over to the CCAP program. I don't anticipate in this next year that we'll be accessing or utilizing any of the reserve funds to balance the budget. Okay. We'll still have excess in Colorado Works to meet that need for a couple of years. Like I said, it's
and they won't be requesting to return it, I hope.
What's that?
The TANF and the
funds like they have in the past. I mean, we have to delicately balance that, because if we have too much in fund balance, then we're not able to get grants and stuff at our other levels. So.
Correct. And the thing that with the TANF funding specifically is not something that the state would take back. They cannot take that TANF funding back. The only program that we have in the past traditionally sent money back on was our long-term care, which was the Medicaid services for single entry point. Under the new contract, we still are potentially required to send any additional back that is given to us administratively. But the Medicaid billing directly that we're doing is retained by us. So that funding will stay.
Yeah, those reserves used to be able to start your year off.
Yeah.
And so we utilize those.
Yeah, and at this point with the reserve fund or our fund balance, we're not having to lean against those specifically because we have enough in the reserve fund to cover that cost.
And we don't know exactly what's going to happen in the next couple of years with all the, I believe, in the presentations we have had from our county assessor, there has to be a stabilization. So whether we know exactly what our tax revenue is going to be, but for us also, we have an industry that is fluctuating, which is the gas industry as well. So too many variables on the air for us to say, well, this is what's going to take place.
Right.
But I'm glad that you're saying for at least a couple of years, possibly we have, we'll continue to be very diligent. So hurry up and do this tomorrow.
Well, and I think also the other thing to point out is, again, as I mentioned earlier in my director's report, is that errors made by technicians in putting folks into programming that, one, either were not qualified, we have started to identify those as concerns. And so since we've changed the business operations in the department, our technicians have gone through extensive training with the state to mitigate those errors. When I came in, we saw several people on folks, local residents, clients that were on programs that they weren't actually qualified to be on. And so as those were found, we were discontinuing those programs because they were not eligible for them. Those were errors made. There's a very fine line with errors as well. When technicians enter data into that CBMS system, if they knowingly enter information that's incorrect and we are auditing we are now auditing cases. And in fact, I just asked our DESS team to send me their current auditing tool so that we can review and ensure that we're capturing all of the requirements of the program as we process applications and redeterms, so that we're not putting folks into programming that they're no longer qualified for. That is one area as a county that many counties struggle with, is that there are tech errors that allow spending in areas that don't need to exist. By having placed leads in positions now to oversee and supervise technicians and case managers throughout programs, those leads are doing QAQC checks to ensure that we're not putting folks in there that shouldn't be in. We're catching those early on so that we're not wasting money in programming on folks that shouldn't be receiving those benefits. So by building a different platform for operations, it's allowed us to not just only streamline the workflow, but it's also allowed us to catch errors. And also, like I said, if they're entering it knowingly and giving those benefits, then it's considered fraud. And at that point, we are investigating with our fraud team now, both external and internal fraud concerns. And so if a technician is knowingly entering information to allow somebody benefits that they know are not eligible, we will catch it. Because we'll not only shut the case down, but the question then becomes, is that employee doing that for more than one? And ultimately, will that employee stay with us? So there are many layers we've put in place in the last 4.5 years, almost 5 years, to start catching a lot of this expense that was going out the door that we weren't catching before.
Okay. Excuse me.
So from I have had the opportunity to, in fact, Director Fiorenzi at the last meeting, and we had a few questions for him. What I look at basically the total appropriation of 2024 versus the total appropriation requested or projected appropriation for 2025, and notwithstanding all the challenges, your department continues to me be pretty solid and have, I mean, I wish we can say we can increase, but this is going to be kind of a waiting, I mean, for us, a waiting time. Let's see what the economy does and how the stabilization takes place. But I personally don't have any high points of any questions now. The only one thing that we recommend to Director Fiorenzi is to work directly with Finance Director Coverley. So A, the reconciliations are taking place, and B, that the numbers, that what is budgeted here is actually reflecting on County General as per DHS.
Correct. Yeah, and they have been in communication regarding the budget. Director Coverley reviews our budget and has worked with Stephen on several different components of that as he's learning the budget and as I've trained him on it. I think the biggest transition in our budget from last year to this year is our case management agency, as we've transitioned away from single entry point to CMA, which now encumbers several new services. So that's an increase in spending. So prior year with single entry point would look substantially smaller than what we're looking at projected spending for 2024, 2025 fiscal year. And then, of course, as a calendar year, 25 will look higher. So that is one area specifically where there's a massive or a larger increase, a variance between last year and this year in that spending. But the drawdown from the direct Medicaid billing that we retain, also because we're doing subcontractor monitoring with Huerfano County as a subcontractor to us, any excess Medicaid dollars that they do not spend have to be returned to us at the county. So for instance, in 2023 at closeout, we identified a receivable on our end from Huerfano County in a large amount of $80,000 plus. So we'll be expecting that receivable back from them. Any additional that is in 2024 at the end of the fiscal year, we will close out and request that funding back from them to help maintain stabilization of that program. Because it does not function as an allocation as the state, it is really more of a, what we call an enterprise program, because we're actually earning revenue for the work being completed versus where we're receiving an allocation and we have to fit that work within that allocation. So because of that, the more work, the more drawdown, the more money is coming into that program. And so we are projected to be over $1.25 million in revenue for 2023-24 or 2024-25 fiscal year.
And who submits that to us, the state or Huerfano County?
What's that?
The $80,000 increase.
So no, the $80,000. So what we do is we pay Huerfano County per month based on the work and activity they did. If they do not utilize all of their CMA funds in that year, then at the end, we book that as a receivable on our end and they have to return unspent funds to the department because we are the primary CMA. We're the ones who wrote the grant and are in charge of administering it for both counties. So that funding comes back to us.
Okay.
And it could fluctuate. They may have spent more in one year versus another, but either way, we track that. Their finance director sends us a report monthly of their profit and loss to that program for long-term care.
Honey?
Any other questions on this item 6C, preliminary budget review for
you? Yeah, sure.
All right. Well, thank you, Mr. Aragon. This is, and then, of course, this is going to be an ongoing communication. Appreciate it. So we're going to go now to financial matters. 7A, consideration of financials and bills for August 2024. Back to you, sir.
So, commissioners, in front of you are financials for August, ending August 31st, 2024. In addition, there is a treasurer's and state report attached. Do you have any questions regarding the financials specifically?
General Lopez?
No, this is the year-to-date expenses. I see so, three of them are highlighted with the starting with the child welfare and then the child support services, 83%, and 141% for the administration. Is that accurate?
Yes, those are correct. So that those are now again, this is a calendar year for you. Mm-hmm. So the expenses that we would see in overage for the fiscal year are going to look significantly different from what we're looking at on calendar year. So because what happens is when we end the fiscal year in June, we're still working off of the 24 budget. When we're working in the last 6 months of 24, we're already working into the 25 budget. Okay. So that's where it becomes difficult to see that number, because that 141 even makes me take a little bit of a setback and go, hi. But again, that's one of the programs where we receive significant incentives to help cover those overages. That's our technicians in our cash assistance program. Again, our child support, you'll see, as you mentioned earlier, you questioned the incentives. We also use those to offset those costs when we receive those incentives to help with that. Our child welfare is one of the areas, again, that was overspent this year due to the workload. But again, as we have transitioned to differential response, we're cutting costs there because we're not having to send staff out as often. We're not getting into dependency and neglect cases with the court, which requires additional workload. So because we're moving to differential response and we're working differently with families, there's not a lesser workload, it's a less costly workload, if that makes sense.
Okay.
Our intervention strategies are much different. We're not having to place, we're not doing out-of-home payments, we're not doing supplemental payments. So we're going to start seeing decreases as those cases fall off or out-of-home. We're going to see decreases in our sub-adopt and relative guardianship subsidy payments as we transition these kiddos out of those programs and get them off the books.
Mm-hmm. I have no other questions.
Thank you, sir.
So I will put one other thing on the treasurer's reconciliation report. If you see on page, the first page there at the bottom, there's an $88,639.81. That is our cooperative management program grant. That only comes in once a year. So I just wanted to point that out to the board that that is not something that you will see monthly. That is a one-time grant lump that we get for that program. And so that you understand that's not a month-to-month piece.
We like to see that every month.
So would I. And I will say this, though, it has gone up. So in years past, we had lost significantly. So this was the first year we've seen about a $20,000 increase to that specific grant. So we're excited that we saw that.
So all the state incentives come in pretty much once a year?
Child supports come in on a quarterly basis. Okay. You will see specific smaller amounts come through as pass-through, but the ones that we retain come in on a quarterly basis. The economic security are once a year lump that we sign into a contract that we have to meet specific mandates. And one of the ones that we're doing now is our customer service call center. So we should see an increase because we're tracking that data now that we have a phone system that we can actually track internal calls. So in the first 6 months, or excuse me, in the first quarter of 2024, our call center handled over 6,600 phone calls locally. That's one agent doing all of that work with backup when needed. So we're tracking that data with the new phone system, and that will get sent to the state so that we can meet the mandate of that incentive portion that we have not been able to get in the past. So I believe we'll also see an incentive increase there.
Good. Okay. I have no other questions. I'll make a motion to approve the financials and bills for August 2024.
Second.
Commissioner Luis Lopez?
Yes.
Commissioner Felix Lopez?
Yes. Consideration of payroll for pay date September 13th and 30th of 2024. Back to you, sir.
Commissioners, payroll total for the 13th of September was $122,328.61. And for September 30th, 2024, the total amount was $121,381.22.
Any other questions?
Questions say there, so I'll entertain a motion.
Motion to approve payroll payday September 13th and 30th, 2024.
I second the motion.
Commissioner Luis Lopez?
Yes.
Commissioner Felix Lopez?
Yes. We do not have any other items on this agenda. I'll make a motion to adjourn this Board of County Commissioners meeting, acting as in the capacity as the Board of Human Services.
Second motion.
Commissioner Luis Lopez?
Yes.
Commissioner Felix Lopez?
Yes.
Thank you, Mr. Aragon.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Thank you, Paula.
Thank you.
And for those on the call, thank you.